You're listening to Connect Communities Podcast, recorded live in Stamford, Connecticut. If you'd like to know more about our community, stop by our website at www.connectcommunity.tv. Enjoy the message.
The topic of our series is All Things New. As you see on the screen, this is the theme of our Easter, also the topic of this new series. And as we're thinking about these new things, as I was preparing and thinking about the idea of new, I was thinking about how all of us, we like new things. We search for new things. There is excitement, there is a sense of improvement, there is a sense of growth, even of accomplishment. When we achieve, when we arrive, when we acquire something new or somewhere new. And part of it, I think, is the cycle of life. Things that happen all around us is sometimes we don't even realize, but they're happening all the time. Like simple things like every 7 days, we start a new week. Like today, today is the beginning of a new week. It's Sunday. We're starting it together here. Every 7 days, there's a new week. Every 30 days, there's a new month. Every 12 months, there's a new year. Every spring, there are new leaves on trees. Every year, there's new fruit on them too. And this cycle of newness, you know, just it gets in us. Then there's the cycle of life that we all witness. New love, new babies, new marriages, new opportunities. New life, new dogs, old cats. There is new houses, new jobs, new cars. And all this not only shows that we pursue new things, that we enjoy new things, but I also think that it feeds that desire that we have to press on for something new. So how do you go about it? How do you deal with this desire that you have for new? How do you navigate and satisfy your desire for the new? Some of you are thinking, JD, that's easy. I go shopping. Have you heard of Amazon? That's what I do. We all desire, we all aspire, we all want to experience new. From small things like a new dish at a new restaurant, a new book, a new movie, a new article, to bigger things like a new friendship, a new career, a new breakthrough. But if when you experience something new, when you're aiming to experience something new and you're left dissatisfied, you're left with a void in your heart, you must consider, you gotta pause and consider, what is this search for new really all about? Like deep inside your heart, what is this search for new really all about? What is the drive behind it? I was talking to a man a long time ago who was telling me about his experience with his first marriage. He went about telling me that when he was saying, when I first got married, JD, things were great. We were in love and we were having a blast. Then things began to deteriorate. I don't understand why my wife at the time was getting on my nerves so much. It's like she did things on purpose, just to set me off, just to annoy me. Things got so bad, we were fighting every single day. She would complain about all the things that I did wrong, and I would tell her why it was all her fault. After many months of that, the marriage finally ended, and we went our separate ways. And he was telling me, I used to think that I should find somebody better, that I should find somebody new, I should search for someone new, someone who's not crazy. And I found her, JD. I found her. The woman that made me believe I could marry again. So we did. I proposed, we got married. And when we first got married, things were great. We were in love and we were having a blast. Then things begin to deteriorate. I don't understand why my second wife was getting on my nerves so much. It's like she did things on purpose just to annoy me. And as the conversation went on, he told me, I realized I was the one ruining my marriages. I realized I was ruining my marriages because I was putting an expectation on it that it couldn't satisfy me. The expectation that he was putting on his marriage was unrealistic, because a marriage, a relationship, cannot satisfy your every desire. And just like with this man, we expect our jobs, our possessions, our relationships, our accomplishments to somehow transform us into the person we want to become. We want material things to change the immaterial. We want other people who have needs just like we do to satisfy our own needs. We want coworkers. We want people in our offices, in our places of work, supervisors, who are dealing with their own problems, who have their own ambitions, to set the way and guide us to the opportunities and the success that we believe we deserve. But when the newness we're looking for can't be found in the new things that we are experiencing, when the newness we're looking for can't be found in that new job, in that new opportunity, in that new relationship, we wonder if it's somewhere else, if we should just walk away from what we committed to or what we decided. We wonder if something will finally, at last, be the new we are yearning for. See, you don't have to answer out loud. But if you were to take inventory of your life, if you were to look at your past and sit for a moment and think about your regrets, think about the things in your past that you're not too proud of. If you were to look back and think of the things that you see as a stain on your past, how many of those things begin at their beginning, at their source? How many of those things were motivated by your desire to find something new? How many of your decisions and your regrets are connected to your desire to find newness in life? Remember that time you told your parents you were going to the library to study and you ended up at the movies with your friends? How about something a little bit more serious? How about the last time you got drunk and made some poor choices? How about the last time you gave yourself prematurely to somebody for the wrong reasons? How about when you stole, or when you cheated, or when you lied? What was behind that? What originated that? What was the source of that? Were you looking for something new? What were you actually looking for? My proposition to you today is that Easter has more to do with you than you think. You might not see it yet. You might not realize it. But if you're looking for something new, if you're looking to satisfy that newness that you're looking for, I want to submit to you that Easter is what you need. What happened this day many, many years ago is what you're looking for. See, the true meaning of Easter changes our norms. It requires us to understand things that we're not accustomed to. Our understanding has to go a little bit beyond what we're used to. And this is nothing new. It was the same with Jesus' closest friends. Even in Jesus' day, they were looking for something new. They wanted something new. And even as they expected from Jesus something new, they didn't fully get it until Easter. See, when Jesus' ministry was in its apex, when it was at its pinnacle, those around him still didn't understand what it was all about. They still didn't get it because they were connected to their expectations. They were rooted in their expectations. And they looked at Jesus and said they couldn't see beyond what they were hoping from him. Jesus became so famous and he was in such demand that multitudes would gather everywhere he went. He was a big deal. And remember, this was before electricity. This was before Twitter. This was before hashtags. This was before bumper stickers. Back then, they would have been called donkey stickers. I wasn't sure about that joke, but I'm glad it landed. Thousands of people would travel by foot wherever Jesus went, just to meet with him, just to be with him, just to listen to his words, to have him pray for them. It was a movement. And Jesus performed many signs during his ministry. Some of them are recorded in the Gospels. But John says that if you were to write all that Jesus did, every single book in the world wouldn't be able to contain what he did. Whether it was hyperbole or not, what we get from it is that Jesus did much more than we know from the scriptures. One of those miracles happened a few weeks before Jesus was crucified, maybe even days. One of Jesus' friends, a man named Lazarus, he got sick. Now, we don't know what kind of sickness he had, but one of his sisters sent for Jesus. And she sent a message to Jesus saying, "Jesus, your friend, the one whom you love, is ill." Hoping that Jesus would come and pray for him. But when Jesus heard it, John 11:4 says that Jesus said this, "This illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it." It's not a response you expect when somebody says, "Your friend is sick." But then again, it's Jesus. What he did always had went an extra mile. What he did always had more significance than what we could see at face value. Jesus was pointing somewhere else. See, he wasn't dismissing the situation. He wasn't being insensitive to it. But he was giving them context that this had a different meaning. And even though Jesus said, "This does not lead to death," what happened next? Lazarus died. And that's when everything turns upside down. We don't understand. Jesus, the wisest man we know, said it wasn't going to lead to death, yet he died. And there it was, a situation, a sad situation. A very difficult situation. See, Lazarus lived in a village called Bethany. It was near Jerusalem. It was about 40 minutes by foot. And we can understand from the scriptures that Lazarus and his sisters, Martha and Mary, were probably well known. Because it says in the scriptures that many of the Jews from Jerusalem came to meet them. And they were consoling Martha. They were consoling Mary. They were mourning with them because this man had died. By the time Jesus showed up, it had been 4 days already. Jesus was a little bit too late. And he comes into that situation. He walks into that place of mourning. And Martha, one of the sisters, comes to Jesus and said, "Jesus, if you were here, this wouldn't have happened. If you were here, we wouldn't have lost him." And what Jesus shares with her next, because I don't know if you've been in a situation where you felt like God wasn't there for you. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where you hoped God would show up somehow, but he wasn't there. At least you felt like he wasn't there. At least there was no evidence of him being there. If you've ever been there, this was it. This was what she was telling Jesus. "Jesus, you weren't here. If you were here, this wouldn't have happened. We wouldn't be mourning right now. But you weren't here." And what Jesus shares next begins to reveal what Easter would be all about. John chapter 11, verse 23 through 27. Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord. I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming to the world." Jesus had been on a 3-year-long mission, give or take. He was popular. He was known. He was famous. He could have established a government. He could have started a religion. He could have been a famous politician. He could have had power, money. And he didn't do any of that. You might say, "Well, JD, some of those things actually happened." because the church has had political influence. Christianity is a religion. And there's a lot, awful lot mention of Jesus in politics nowadays. And it's true. And I could spend some time talking about how all of that is secondary, because that wasn't his primary goal. But let me simply say this. When you read the Gospels, when you read the story of Jesus, you don't see his life pointing at any of that. You don't see the trajectory of his ministry, of his life, pointing and directed at any of those things. When you look at the gospel and you see the life of Jesus, you see that his life, his mission, his desire was for something deeper. It was for something more personal. It was for something more intimate. So when Jesus told Martha, "I am the resurrection, I am the life. If you believe in me, even though you die, you shall live." He was giving her a framework for his ministry. He was explaining to her what he was doing here. He was showing her his mission. And for you to get a real sense of what Jesus was talking about, for you to get a real sense of what he meant, you gotta get up close and personal. And that's what this story was. Up close, personal. That's what Lazarus' death was. It was a tragedy. A good man had died. And people were mourning. It was not fair. It was not just. Someone they loved had passed. This is as personal as it gets. This is not the setup for religious literature. This was not a think tank on morality and philosophy. This was not the setting for a conceptual or abstract notion of what is right and what is wrong. This is real. This was as real as it gets. Real pain, real grief, real sorrow, real loss. This was real. And Jesus walks into that situation. And he connects to it. And some of us need to remember that a walk with Jesus cannot be conceptual. A life with Jesus doesn't really work as a simple concept. Even though Christianity might have influenced politics, even though Christianity might have influenced philosophy, even though Christianity might have influenced our sense of morality, you can't just have a tangential relationship with Christ by analyzing his teachings and admiring what he stood for. Because Jesus did not come to prove to you that he is right and you're wrong. He didn't come to show you that you're a sinful person, that unless you follow his way, you're damned to hell. He came to save that which was lost. He came to walk into a dead situation and bring life into it. He came to solve problems. He came to wake up dreams back to life. He came to transform situations and make them better. And he was seeking to save them in that situation. They couldn't see it. And so right then and there, in that place of grief, in that place of despair, Jesus does the impossible. Something they couldn't have expected or imagined, Jesus ordered the tomb to be open. It had been closed for 4 days. The man was in there. Certainly wasn't smelling good. But he said, "Open the tomb." And they did. They did. And scripture says that Jesus, with a loud voice, said, "Lazarus, come out." And guess what happened next? Out came Lazarus. With straps around him. With linen on his face. Still tied up. He walks out of that tomb. JD, I thought this Easter was about Jesus' resurrection. And maybe some Reese's Pieces on the side. We have that for you a little later. There was something else at play here. Jesus was unveiling what he came to do. He was unveiling that resurrection wasn't just for him. He was showing what was at play. And the people began to believe. Something unraveled after this miracle. People began to believe, and Jesus' fame went like extra, like supersize. It went to the next level. Things got so intense that the religious leaders at the time decided to kill him. But why did things get intense? Why did people decide to follow Jesus? Because Jesus brought a kind of life with God that they hadn't seen. See, it wasn't about rules. It wasn't about regulations. It wasn't about calling your sin and condemning you and telling you what you were doing wrong. It was about connection with God. It was about making a life with God real. It was about shining the light of God in somebody's situation. It was about walking into a place of pain and relieving that pain and redeeming the sorrow and bringing joy where there was sadness. That's what Jesus did throughout his ministry. That's what he came to do. And so the powers that be didn't like that because they were losing control. And so things got so intense that during the Passover feast, as Jesus came into Jerusalem on a donkey, people started taking their coats off and putting it on the floor so Jesus wouldn't walk on dust. They started getting palm tree leaves and laying it on the floor so that Jesus would gallop over them. Now it makes sense, right? They were shouting shouts of praise. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, the King of Israel. Look at him. It makes sense, right? It makes total sense. I mean, it surely makes sense to us. That if somebody raises your friend from the dead, you're going to praise him. You're going to put your coat on the floor. You're going to throw rose petals for them to walk on the floor. You're going to call him king. It makes perfect sense, at least to me. Because in our world, if you can pass 11 men holding an oblong ball, and you can run that ball for 100 yards, we'll fill up stadiums to praise you. We'll give you a trophy every year. We will give you millions of dollars. We will shout your name. We will wear clothing with your name on it. In our world, if you can get a bouncing ball into a hoop 10 feet in the air, you're called king. We will cut our hair like yours and shave our beard like yours. We will wear your shoes and pay thousands of dollars for your shoes. Because you can get a bouncing ball inside a hoop. Not hating. I'm just saying. It's what we do. I'm just saying. It's what we do. If you can make people laugh real good, we'll come watch your show. We'll pay hundreds of dollars to watch you. We'll fill up rooms. And we will applaud you. So imagine if somebody was able to bring your friend from the dead. Yeah, you're going to scream his name. Yeah, you're going to lay your coats on the floor. Yeah, you're going to put palm tree leaves, if you have them, imported from Florida. You do whatever it takes. So it makes sense that they were praising Jesus. It makes sense that they called him king and that they want him to be the man. They wanted him to be the guy leading them. They wanted him to sit on a throne, an earthly throne, and govern the earth. But he was after something deeper. He didn't want power, at least not political power. He didn't want to rule over their lives like an emperor. They still didn't understand. Look at what John says, chapter 12, verse 16. His disciples did not understand these things at first. But when Jesus was glorified, after the resurrection, after Easter, then they remembered that these things had been written about him and that they had been done. They didn't understand it at first. It took Easter for them to get it. And according to John, Jesus, after Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead, like I said, the religious leaders decided to kill him, and that's what they did. That's what happened. Jesus was captured. And the night that he was captured because he was betrayed. by one of his own, turned him over. And when he turned him over and the soldiers got him, all his disciples fled. They all ran away. And after they all ran away, one of his closest friends, who said, "I will go to the cross with you, I will die with you," denied him 3 times. And after he denied him, the religious leaders condemned him. And after they condemned him, the empire sentenced him. And as the empire were sentencing him, the crowd, the people were mocking and scorning him all the way to that crucifixion place. And he died a horrible death because there was something else at play. Because he had something else in mind. See, they didn't understand it. For his followers, the moment Jesus died, hope died. What they were hoping for died. The man that was going to rule the world died. The person who could raise people from the dead died. The man who could heal the sick died. The man who was the wisest person, most compassionate person that they knew died. Their hope died. Their hope for deliverance and freedom died. They thought he was it. They thought he was the man, and now he's on the cross. It didn't make sense. Why is he dead? There was something else at play. He was hanging on that cross. Their hope was gone. They couldn't see it. What do you do when hope is gone? What do you do when you go for something, when you try to engage in something, when you put your hope in a new business, a new idea, a new relationship, and it doesn't work out? It doesn't fulfill that need. It doesn't fulfill that newness that you're looking for. What do you do when you try and you give your all and it fails? What do you do when your hope dies? What do you do when you give your all and you hope it's going to come back full and it comes back empty? What do you do when your search for meaning and fulfillment on the inside can't connect? You just can't connect when every new experience you have leaves you wanting. I think we do one of two things. I think we begin to doubt. I think we lose our faith. Maybe that's where you are today. You're doubting. Because that's what we do when we're not satisfied. When we engage in something and we're not satisfied, we start looking at our past decisions and we start second-guessing ourselves. We lose our confidence. We wonder if it was all worth it. We second-guess our commitments, right? Should I have married him? Should I have proposed to her? Should I have taken that job? Should I have chosen that degree? We second guess our decisions. Should I have made the move? Should I have stayed? Should I have taken this job? Should I have started that degree? Should I have gotten the tattoo? Probably not. Too late for that one. Just cover it. You either doubt yourself or you do something that at the surface sounds noble, but it can be even more dangerous. You lower your expectations. You take your expectations and you just bring it way down. Because when you lower your expectations, it sounds good at first. Because it removes the pressure from other people. It removes the pressure from your job. It removes the pressure for the things that you've decided for. It sounds mature. Because you're taking that away from somebody else. It sounds mature to say, I can't expect these things to give me what I want. But it is dangerously frustrating. Because when you lower your expectations, you're boxing yourself in to a life that you know you're not meant to live. You lock yourself in a kind of life that is limited. And you can only endure that for so long. It's going to come out some way. Because you were not made to live bound. You were not made to live restricted. You were made for freedom. You were not made to live limited. You were made to dream, to reach for higher ground. And you know what? Something in you tells you to reach for more. Something in you tells you to go beyond the limits. Something you tells you that you are supposed to have newness of life. Something in you tells you that you got to reach for new. And when you tell yourself, I can't get it because it's not fair on that person. I can't get it because that job can't deliver. I can't get it because I just can't do it. Even though you're correct, those things can't deliver most of the time. It can produce a long-term frustration that can have deep side effects. You can find yourself bitter. You can find yourself looking at a new situation with old eyes. It's not going to work. It's not going to happen. It can drain your hope for a brighter future. It can cause substance abuse to be attractive. Because why not? You got to cope somehow with this frustration. It can cause you to lash out and go full YOLO. Because who cares? But I propose to you that instead of opening your heart to doubt, instead of living your life by lowering your expectations, I propose to you that you consider, that you may consider today a new perspective, which is the perspective that Jesus wants us to receive. That the new you're looking for is not an outside-in experience, is not going to come from the outside, it's an inside-out transformation. That's why Jesus didn't want an earthly throne, he wanted a seat in your heart. And that's what Easter is about. Romans chapter 6, verses 4 and 5 says this. We were buried therefore with him by baptism into death, in order that just as Jesus Christ was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father, we too might walk in what? Newness of life. For if we have been united with him in death like this, we shall certainly be united with him in a resurrection like this. There is a reason why we all desire something new. And I personally think that that's the way God designed you, to reach for new, to want a new thing, to expect a new thing. And maybe you're here thinking that your desire for new is wrong. It's not wrong. It's just misplaced. There is a place that you can direct your desire. And some of you, you might be even eerie of church life. Which is, you're probably right. Because you had experiences and thoughts and you've heard things that's turned you off. And you might be right in your assessment and the experiences you have had. But I wanna make it clear for you today that what Jesus came to do, Jesus did not come to start a religion or a government or a political party. Jesus came to call the Lazaruses in your life out of their tombs. The dreams that have died, the things that you have given up on, the things that you thought were buried and gone, he came to call those things back to life and reignite your heart and reignite your soul and give you that newness of life every single day. He came to save what was lost and to give life to dead things. He came to bring you new life. And it's not an outside-in thing. It's not an outside-in experience, it's an inside-out transformation. It's not outside-in, it's inside-out. It's not outside-in, it's inside-out. And we're calling this the year to grow stronger, and to grow stronger, we have to expand our minds. We have to think bigger, we have to have an open mind to what Jesus came to do. See, his own disciples didn't understand it at first. So I know you're all smart here in the room, but could it be that you just didn't get it yet? If the people who walked with Jesus didn't get it, could it be that there's some understanding that we can all have? That we can expand our minds a little bit? I don't, I, We tend to dismiss what we don't understand. And I hope that you don't dismiss what Jesus came to offer. See, Jesus didn't raise from the dead. He didn't rise from the dead to make you believe in a religion. He rose from the dead to bring you new life from the inside out. And that's not weird. Jesus didn't come to do anything weird. That's not weird. What Jesus came to do is not weird. Clowns are weird. Cats are weird. They are. We've had a cat. Our cat, out of nowhere one day, I'm in the kitchen, just minding my own business. The cat comes running and jumps on the window. The window's closed. Breaks our window. Cost me over $100 to fix the window for nothing. There was nothing on the window. There was nothing flying outside. There was nothing. He just felt like he was Super Cat or something. We gave him away. We did. I'm sorry. We did. There's more to the story, but let's just say that the cat is no longer okay. Cats are weird. Know what's weird? Pineapple on pizza. I'm a fan. I like it. Okay, but pineapple on bacon is weird. I'm sorry. It's weird. It's a fruit. It should have a pina colada, not on pizza and cheese. Come on. I don't want you to miss this. Because what Jesus did was not weird. It was impossible. And we can't miss the two. We can't mix them up. Nothing he did was weird. It all made sense. And what he wants to do for you might seem impossible. But impossibility is restricted to our nature. I just mentioned my cat. I can open a window if I want to go through it. My cat can't. It's impossible for him to open a window. We actually still don't know if it's a him or a she. One vet said it was a boy. The SPCA said it was a girl. We don't know. It was a cat. It was black. I can, for the cat, I'm a god, because I can open a window, I can drive a car, I can speak. What you think is impossible, it's only impossible because you can only look at it from your perspective. But from Jesus' perspective, it's not impossible. It's what he does. He heals. He transforms. He raises things back to life. He gives you new life. He can come out of that tomb and say, I am he that it was and is to come. He can walk into your life right now, today. He died for you. He rose again for you on that third day. And he's still alive. And he wants to give you life. It's not weird. It's impossible. And you need to know this today. That Jesus did not come down to earth to stay on earth. He came down to earth to be with us. He didn't rise from the dead to show how powerful he is. He rose from the dead so you can rise from the dead. And he didn't ascend to heaven just to be by himself and show how great he is so we can worship him from down here. He ascended to heaven so that one day you can ascend to heaven as well and live in eternity with him. He did that so that every single day you may walk in newness of life and you can find that new thing you were looking for. He is the new you were looking for. So do you receive it this morning? Amen. Do you receive it today? Amen. I want to call the band back up.